Welcome to A Girl, A Guy, and A Buffy podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Kate Balzer.
And I'm Charles Swint.
Hey, welcome back. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing good.
Right.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Ready to talk all things music and Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
La 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 la.
It would have been better if you trilled in the theme song to Buffy.
Oh, for those of you who are just joining us for the first time, we are two friends who are watching who have been watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Wow, that was weird. We're two friends who've been watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer for, you know, since the beginning, and this is not a rewatch podcast. This is a spoilery podcast, and we're talking about big bad themes. And this season, our theme is pop culture. So this season, we've been talking about all things pop culture and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And this episode is all about music.
Yes. Da-da-da-da.
Da-da-da. Hey, what?
As you can tell, we're going to do musical cues during this episode, so apparently. We did not discuss this, but it's coming out.
Wait, I don't know if we can sing all of these
things.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
There might be some copyright. There might be some copyright issues. I sang less than 30 seconds of it. I think we'll be okay.
I think so, too.
I think we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your experience with music? Like, what are your
my personal experience?
Yeah.
Well, I mainly it's been around piano. My mom put me into piano lessons around like the age of like 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. And I took piano lessons for about probably 10 years. I was about 15 or 16 when I stopped. And it really wasn't because I didn't like it. It was because I started getting into a whole lot of other activities in high school. And then it was around the time that we had moved down to Georgia. And the first piano teacher I got, he was a master student, I think at Georgia State University in music. And I don't know, he was fine, but like, I wasn't really learning from him. In fact, I remember having like conversations with him about books. I mean, he was great. Like, we had a really good conversation. He was like the first adult that I remember meeting, and he was like in his 20s. So like, it's not like he was all that much older than me, who was like really into, he read a lot of more nonfiction books. And I was like, whoa, like I'd only, you know, my whole thing was like fiction. So I feel like he opened my eyes that way. But he didn't like, it was kind of like, you know, he'd send me home with a piece, I'd do it, I'd come, and like, it just wasn't, I don't know why I didn't go look for another piano teacher, but for whatever reason I didn't. Like I said, I think it was because I was getting involved in so many other activities. So I've tried to like kind of keep it up over the years, but not spectacularly well. Not really. There was a period of time where I was like getting back into the swing of it, but now it's been so long that it's like, I feel like I play the piano like somebody who pecks at typing plays.
Gotcha.
Like I'm so slow because I've forgotten so much. I'm like, I need to do some adult lessons. I would love to start playing again. I actually do miss it. I really loved it. And most of my experience, like most of my piano teachers were kind of typical of, you know, a lot of piano teachers is most of the focus was on classical music.
Right.
But it did help me develop an appreciation of classical music. I remember I think I asked to do some more popular stuff, and it kind of makes me laugh now. The pieces that one of my teachers, who I love, she was one of my favorite teachers, pulled out for me to do. We did Killing Me Softly with his song,
uh-huh.
the original. This was right. Before the Fugees version. But it
Roberta
made me laugh
because
when the Fugees, Roberta Flack, when the Fugees version came out, I like totally knew it.
You were like, I know this one.
I know this song. And then Piano Man by Billy Joel.
Okay.
So like they were good songs. They were probably a little bit more like classic pop or Yeah, classic pop, but nothing like au courant. Like I wasn't playing Madonna or, you know, like which I think is what I kind of wanted. But yeah, that's mostly my experience with music. Well, and then just using music for dance. I was always also a dancer and I danced through college. So, you know, using music for dance. And that was probably like even more so my initial connection to music. And I still always prefer like more melodic music where there's the opportunity to dance. Because my first exposure was like pop music for, you know, baby ballet, baby jazz, baby tap.
Oh, I
So,
love it.
yeah. So, what's your tell us about your experience?
Mine is so mostly mine is in chorus. I did chorus like all through like elementary school and middle school and high school, and even into college. So I did, I was in all kinds of like chorus groups and I did madrigals in high school and chorale and all of that nerdy, chorus stuff. So I did a lot of like classical music, a lot of classical songs and a lot of classical pieces and, and Latin and, the requiems and all of those things. And I did some in high school. I did some vocal jazz. I was in a vocal jazz group in high
Oh,
school. Did you
look at them.
not?
I
Did you
did
not know
not.
this? Okay, so this is at Chattahoochee. This was at high school.
How did I not know this?
Yeah, we made a vocal jazz album. We got.
Oh my gosh. People, like we went through high school together. We like saw each other every
Every
day.
day. I don't know
How
how
did
we
I
missed
not know
this.
this?
This was senior year. This was senior year.
Okay, if I knew this, I have 100% forgotten it, which is actually completely
Which is
possible.
possible, which is totally possible. We went to we got a grant through like the Grammys and the schools program to make a
Gosh.
vocal jazz album. And so we rehearsed all year, and then I think it was like in the spring, we went to Tree Sound Studios, where like Outkast and like all these like big
Oh
huge name people were like recording their
my
albums.
God.
And we went into the studio for the day and we recorded this. We recorded like, I don't know, like 8 or 10 songs
That's so
onto
cool.
an
Do you
album.
still have it?
I don't. I,
Oh man.
well, maybe I do somewhere. I don't know. But I know that it's online somewhere. I'll have to find it because
Oh.
somebody in the group
Yeah.
found it during COVID and like shared it with all of us
That's so
on
cool.
there. Yeah, it was crazy. So we did a lot of that stuff. So and then of course with dance and things like that. But
Yeah.
I tried to do piano for a little bit. My dad got me into like gave me lessons, but I
Yeah.
really didn't like the lessons, but I had keyboards all the time. Like we had keyboards and guitars,
Yeah.
none of which I could play. And so I would figure things out basically by sound. And so I would just try to figure out how to play things, by ear, which, that didn't really help. But like
Yeah.
I figured out like a Janet Jackson song to play. And then like the Peanuts theme, I
Yeah.
figured that out by ear too. So that, I
Yeah.
mean, but if I had to do it now, I don't know if I could, or I could get like a couple of notes, but then it blow the
Yeah.
rest.
Yeah, you saying that reminded me. I forgot. I actually played clarinet for a short period too. I really loved it. But it was, again, a move happened. So I learned it at one school, moved, went to be like in the band in elementary school, and I did not like the band instructor. He was rather sexist. I mean, he definitely had a preferential treatment towards boys. And I immediately like saw that and I was like, I'm miserable. I'm very unhappy. I don't want to do this. And you know, like other than doing things through school at especially at the time if you're not like thinking career wise, where else are you gonna like use the clarinet, you know? So I guess that's probably like I don't know why I didn't do private lessons, but for whatever reason I didn't. But yeah. So that, you know, shout out to like awesome teachers. Teachers make such a difference in whether you continue or pursue whatever it is that you're learning. A bad teacher can definitely turn you off.
Thank you, music teachers, our
Yes.
underappreciated music teachers out there.
Absolutely.
Very much appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yes. So the music, so we see how music has influenced us.
Right.
And obviously music influenced Buffy, and the
Absolutely.
show and everything. You want to
Yeah,
kick
I
us
mean,
off?
music is just, it's, if it's oftentimes, if it's done really well in television or film, you don't notice it. But it is so critical. And if they took it away, you would realize how critical of a role it plays,
Right. Yeah.
you know, in helping to tell the story.
And so I think, like, for the purposes of our discussion, if we're going to break this down into a couple of different pieces. The overall score, we're talking about, like, the score
Right.
of the show, the orchestration and all of that stuff. Because Buffy was a show that, unlike other shows, had all these bands playing all the time too, which was also sort of a part of the soundtrack to everything. And then it also had a musical episode. So we're going
Right.
to kind of break it down in those ways and looking at, like, the score of Buffy, the bands of Buffy, and the musical episode
Yep.
of Buffy. So, orchestration.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say one thing to add about the purpose of music. And I got this from a website called CNI Studios, and I think it's just a great couple of points to remind us about how important music is. So it helps create atmosphere, it sets mood and tone for a scene, adds depth and texture to advance the scene or story. It's a way to communicate to the audience without words, and it definitely provokes emotional reactions. And you know, that certainly applies all of that to Buffy's score.
Right, yes. There's so much to talk about it, and, like, the way that they sort of create these suites and
Yeah.
these melodic themes for the characters and for the shows is really it's really impressive, and I don't know if there. I mean, maybe other shows do this. I'm sure they do, but I don't always notice it as much. I feel like, and I think for me, like, listening to, and maybe it's because I haven't watched them as much as I have with Buffy, but I just, like, when those themes are coming, I can recognize those themes, like the Angel and Buffy theme, like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, those are things that I
Like the gift music,
yeah
the sequence in The Gift and the sequence in Chosen,
right
those very much stand out to me. Or the sequence from Hush.
The Restless Suite is
Yeah, the
another
Restless
one.
Suite. Yeah, absolutely.
That just feels, I mean, again, those melodies feel so, those suites feel so iconic, and are such a huge part of creating it, especially because it's part of this sort of, it was this mixed genre horror, comedy, drama sort of situation. And so
Right.
when you have these love themes, and when you get a really good love theme that holds, and you keep using it over and over again, or you get the, when you're dealing with when you're dealing with Restless, and you're dealing with sort of this surreal plane of existence in this dream world where there is this battle going on and all of that stuff, creating, using the music to create the conversation that's happening on screen when there is no dialogue happening.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think certainly out of the shows I've watched, while, you know, they're all scored and the music plays an important role, to use like cliche terms, it is feels more cinematic in Buffy than a lot of shows typically, especially again, you know, can't I think stress the importance enough of the relatively small size of the show on its small network,
Right.
you know, with limited resources, and yet you can't tell that. I think this, you know, the score is so incredible, and those episodes would read differently with a different score or a different composer behind it. You know,
Yeah.
and a lot of that is also down to, you know, Joss Whedon himself. There was a great quote from Chris Beck, and Chris is basically, if you think about the sound of Buffy, he created it. He was the longest running composer. He wasn't there the entire series, but he, the Angel Buffy theme, he did The Gift, he did Restless, he was there for Hush. I mean, that is all Chris Beck. And this quote really kind of shows you how Buffy got its sound. It's from Into Every Generation a Slayer is Born, How Buffy Staked Our Hearts by Evan Ross Katz. And the quote is, quote, Joss Whedon loves big symphonic music, and so do I. And while the show is set in high school, the themes and emotional arcs are big. Love, life and death, the end of the world, just to name a few. So I saw it as an opportunity to flex my orchestral muscles and write cinematic music that makes great use of recurring mu musical motifs. It was truly an awesome compositional opportunity, end quote.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, how can you argue with how can you argue with that? I mean, there's just there it really did. It felt, I like the word that you use, cinematic. I mean, there it just made it, I think it made the show feel bigger than it was, and gave it, you know, and really sort of created a universe that we could all sort of feel comfortable in. And I think subconsciously, when you hear those themes and when you start hearing those things, I think it starts to pluck at some like emotional chords in your heart or whatever like that. You start to attach emotion with the musical motifs that start coming up. And so even if nothing's happening, you're like, oh, here it comes. I hear.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, some of those musical suites or motifs, you know, appear on the various soundtracks. And I'm not even watching an episode. I'll just be listening to a soundtrack, and like, it may cause me to tear up.
Right.
Because like, I know what goes along with it. The music itself evokes it, but it also like, un you know, underscored, but I'm bum. The scene, it made the emotion in the scene even more.
Right. And one of the things too that I think of when I think of like the music and the scoring behind it is that I think about the DVD box sets, right? When I had the DVDs, I just remember because oftentimes because oftentimes I would watch Buffy over and over again. I would fall asleep and like all the episodes would play and then it would pop back to the main menu. And so then the orchestration that was happening on the menu screen, sometimes I would fall asleep to that or wake up to those things because it was still playing. So even those, and those weren't like, those were just nice musical moments in an episode that they took from there to use on that. And just sort of the power of these sort of simple orchestrations that occurred in one moment of one show can be so powerful, with such a powerful moment that they were like, let's stick it here, let's use it here. I think we would be remiss not to talk about, although it kind of overlaps a little bit, but to talk about the theme itself, like the theme song of Buffy.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you learned this in your research. I learned something that was new to me. Apparently, how this all happened was, they had hired a professional composer, and Joss Whedon was not happy with what they were coming up with for the theme. And it turned out a friend of Nerf Herder's, who eventually created the theme song, turned Allison Hannigan onto their first indie release. And she became such a fan that she shared it around with like the crew and cast, including Joss Whedon, and he loved it. So he reached out to them and had them write the theme. He wanted something like much more punk and, you know, basically what we got. And that is how Nerf Herder wrote the theme song to Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Thank you, Allison
I know. Thank you, the
Hannigan.
friend of Nerf Herders,
Right.
for turning Allison onto it. I think that's so cool.
Yeah. It's such a and it go and even the theme song goes through some changes too. I mean, they you hear it in the first, in season one. It has a little bit of a grittier theme, but I think as it goes on, and I think by season three, we get sort of the more like polished, I think
Yeah.
sort of the polished version. And there's the one with the scream and the one without the scream in there. The scream goes away, I think, at one point.
Oh, wow. I never noticed
I
that.
think so, yeah.
Huh. I'll have to pay attention.
Yeah, I think it's around season three or season four where that's squeal where they're like, I think, yeah.
You know, I mean, we especially grew up with theme songs to TV shows being a big part of the show, like knowing the Brady Bunch theme, even though that was before our time. Like we watched it in reruns. But you know, the like Growing Pains, that was had lyrics, like you know the songs to that or the
Show me
lyrics to
the
that.
smile of
Yeah.
again.
What was the one with Michael J. Fox? Why can't I think of his show right now?
As long as
Family
you got
Ties, the
it,
Family Ties
brother,
theme,
we
Cheers,
got a
Golden
problem. Right.
Girls. I mean, it was like, I mean, it's particularly comedies, but it was prime theme song
Sure.
ages. And so, unfortunately, a lot of that has gone away with streaming. So I love that Buffy has such an enduring theme. Every time I hear it, I just want to like headbang and like
Right.
dance around, be in a mosh pit. Like it's so energizing. It makes me excited to watch the show. You know, I'm like, oh yeah, let's go.
Yeah, you know what you're getting into, I think. Like you're
Yeah.
getting into something like hard and heavy and fun at the same time,
Right.
and
And even though, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
a little playful because you've got this band called Nerf Herder, which is,
Yeah.
so yeah, I would agree. Like this is definitely the time where theme songs are going away, where TV
Yeah.
theme songs are going away. I mean, there are still some, I mean, there are a few TV shows that have like iconic theme songs, like,
Yeah.
the Law and Order SVU theme song is
Yeah.
freaking iconic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but yeah, that's my superpower is that I can, name a TV theme song and I can tell you what it, I can sing the theme song to from
I love it. It's a good superpower to have. Yeah. Well, and it's also, even though it's very of its time, it's also very timeless. You know,
Yeah.
it doesn't necessarily feel, you know, partly because obviously like punk and offshoots of punk music endure. So it's not like punk's gone away and it feels like, oh, that was only from like the 70s to the 90s.
Right.
But yeah, if I listen to it, I'm like, oh, it definitely evokes that age of like punk and indie music in the 90s. But at the same time, I'm like, it doesn't feel dated. I'm not like, oh gosh, that theme song feels so old.
Right. It's not like you're listening to like the theme song from like Dynasty or something like that, which
Right,
has a very
exactly.
like da-da-da!
Yeah,
This like a
exactly.
grandiose sort of like weird
Yeah,
orchestral
absolutely.
thing, although that is an
Yeah.
iconic theme song.
Yeah. It's
Yeah, and
true.
so yeah, it's a great theme song. I think it, I mean, it holds, and like you said, we start to get away from theme songs and having that with the advent of streaming, but also I think just a lot of dramas started to, just TV shows were like, let's get into the action. Like we like this feels like an unnecessary thing to have because now we're just going to like run people's names at the bottom of the screen And we're not going to do the thing where it's like, oh, starring so and so. And, you need that time to introduce the actors in the show. And it becomes less about the actors in the show and more about, the show itself.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that was a combo of like the changing landscape of television and then also TV shows getting shorter so they could fit in more commercials or longer commercial breaks. So it was like, hey, if we can cut somewhere so we can tell more story, that's an obvious place to cut.
Right. So, Hush, and
Hush.
while where there is nothing but music because there are no vocals,
Right.
and like the importance of that and how that had to fill in, how that fills in the space, and how the music conveys the horror,
Right.
and the comedy of it all. The horror, the comedy, the drama, the action, like it has everything. I mean, that soundtrack has everything, and it is so overscored. Like not overscored in a bad way, but just like it is the focus of that episode.
Right. Absolutely. It's like it takes what silent films did, like 100 times up.
Right.
And you just, yeah, it evokes the scariness. And then the fact that like nobody can physically talk. It's not like they're doing a silent episode where they've just decided not to do dialogue, but like that ability is taken away. And then you have these incredibly creepy looking creatures. It might actually be one of the, particularly when you first see it, scariest episodes of Buffy. I think you could argue. It's definitely is much more in like old school horror style. Yeah, it's just such a cool episode.
I mean, and to do that, I mean, you've been going along, especially like, and it's a brave choice to do an episode like that too, because you, especially by this time in season 4, you're talking about a show who is touted for its dialogue, for its snappy banter, and its
Right.
witty comebacks, and all of this stuff, and then right in the middle of that, you just take that all away.
Yeah. Which is exactly what he wanted to do. That was the whole impetus for the episode.
And to rely on the strength of your cast and their acting abilities and
Yeah.
your storytelling, you
Right.
as a storyteller, to be able to convey this, convey these emotions. And a lot of stuff happens in that episode too.
Yes.
It's Tara and Willow. It's Xander realizing that he truly loves Anya. It's Riley figuring out who Buffy is. I mean, so much happens to everybody in that episode.
Right.
I
And the episode shows that, particularly with these characters, words can often get in the way. They didn't truly communicate on some of these issues until their ability to do so with words was taken away. And they really had to I don't know, step up and or they just it was more that they had like, well, it was a combination of things. Like you said, Xander had his realization. I think not being able to speak probably got Tara over some of her shyness. So she was really forced to reach out to Willow. And then, of course, Buffy and Riley couldn't hide anymore behind their facades, and the truth about what each of them do comes out.
It's that action speaks louder than words sort of situations. I
For
mean,
sure. Yeah.
sort of instinct taking over. I mean,
Yeah.
especially with Xander and Anya, like in that moment,
Absolutely.
and even with Tara and Willow, like them being able to do magic together, and like
Right.
that moment of, oh, this we can really do this together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is such a great episode. And the score for that is just, it's stellar. I wish I knew more about sort of like some musical motifs, as much as or as much or as little as I know about music.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there is some really wonderful, there's some clever something other story being told in a lot of these suites and things like that that I would love to know more about from the
Yeah, it would definitely be a
composers.
fun to take some sort of course on the scoring composition of Buffy.
If any of the composers of Buffy are listening right now, that would be great. We would love to talk to you about what that was like composing these things. What was the musical motifs and stories you were telling with those notes?
Yeah.
Please reach out to us.
So, soundtrack of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, just as important, I think, as the original score. It's certainly one of the first shows for me that it caught my attention. You know, between the fact, like you said, they have the bronze, so you had bands appearing, you know, weekly or every few weeks, depending on when a scene was shot at the bronze. But then a lot of that music was used in key moments of the series as well.
Yeah, so right. Because the thing that they chose to do, so we're in the 90s and we're teen shows. We've got like 90210. You
Right.
know, music is really, there's a lot of, cultural music references happening. People are using pop songs on TV shows, but Buffy, they make the choice not to do that, at least very often, and to go with more, of a grungy sound for this small town. So we get all of these very much like indie punk bands and
Right.
things playing the bronze and doing all that and sort of filling in, over the orchestration, which I think works better, because especially when you're about to do a transition from some of the orchestration that we have going on and what we're doing with the score, especially when it comes to like the fight sequences, because most of, like a lot of times, we're at the bronze and there's a band playing and it's like dun, 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 and then a
Yeah.
fight breaks out, like that going into like dun, 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 I don't want no scrubs feels super weird. Like that just doesn't seem like a thing that's gonna work. So, like, you have to come up with a sound that complements what you've already created as the score. And so it, or, so
The
you,
sound of the show.
yeah,
Yeah.
and what that is.
Well, I think it's also a bit of synchronicity in that. And I believe I mentioned this in another episode. It may be one that's actually coming up, so you may not have heard me say this yet. but again, I believe I remember reading, or it may have been in the commentaries on the DVDs, but part of the reason they got the bands that they did is they had very little money to hire bands.
Yeah,
And so
absolutely.
it was you could get these indie bands for a lot less. And then that was also a very predominant aspect of the LA music scene at the time. So it luckily fit the show, like what was happening in music at the time in LA fit the show. So it was a great like I said, synchronicity. It just all came together and worked really well. You know, they may have I don't know if they this is one thing I've never seen and written anywhere or heard in anywhere, but I don't know if they adapted what they were doing to fit that because that was what was available. Or again, it just was all like perfectly came together at right music for the right show at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, from the things that I've read, it seemed like that was like you said. I mean, there is sort of this idea like that there is a lot of this indie, indie pop grunge happening in LA. But I think it was very, I mean, I think it was very intentional. All of that was incredibly intentional, basically from the beginning,
Yeah.
that they wanted to create this, create the sound and create this, especially because, especially with a place like the Bronze, with all of these where everyone is playing, what kind of bands are you going to be booking here? you're not going to get a whole lot of big names playing at the Bronze. That feels like a weird thing to have happen. So there is something that I found. This was from an older article, but just talking about sort of the influence, is that after, like, even after the show was over, there was a UK pop band, a pop punk band called The Potentials
Oh, yes,
that
I saw
sprung
that.
out. And everything that they did was about, like, being a potential slayer or a superhero,
Yeah.
and all of that stuff. And so they wrote songs about witches and vengeance demons on the
Yeah.
internet. And it was all like Riot Girl, Riot Girl music. So I think that, like, the influence of the music on the show went well beyond, continues to inspire people, and groups well after the show is over.
Yeah. Oh, and then I love the fact that Nerf Herder is the last band to play at the Bronze.
Yeah,
That was awesome.
it's
That was
super,
like good for you.
very fitting.
So fitting. Yeah. Which actually, oh, just saying that reminds me, I was going to say the other thing about the bands used both at the Bronze and just, the music used in the soundtrack for the show, what you were speaking to about it didn't tie into what was popular at that period of time. Like none of the artists that were in the top, 40 were going to be on Buffy. It also spoke to the cool factor of the show and the cult nature of the show, because if you were like, if you really liked some of the stuff you were being exposed to, it was like, I'm sure a lot of your friends were not knew, didn't know of it unless they were also Buffy fans or happened to be like way into, indie punk music. So it gave you this like, hey, I'm listening to like some deep cut stuff that not everyone knows about,
Do you know about these guys?
Right, exactly.
Well, and I see, and I feel like that's where, and that's kind of where sometimes I like it and I think it works, but it is like the one when Michelle Branch comes on, I think it is kind of the one time that it was like, oh, ratings grab, but the song is so good and it
Yeah.
worked because I remember that song was everywhere. That
True.
song was like everybody knew that song. That song played once an hour, every hour,
It's true.
on every station. It was in heavy, heavy rotation. So for them, it was a huge get,
Right.
and it was UPN year. So I think they needed
True.
something for, they were also probably looking for, a ratings grab in that moment. I'm glad that it paid off, though. I'm glad that, like, it was one of those things where it works because she's so youthful and because that song specifically worked so well with everything that they were doing in Tabula Rasa. Like, it
Right.
really sort of saying goodbye to all these relationships and stuff like that. Like, it really worked in that. Otherwise, I feel like it could have been a real big miss for them.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I remember reading stuff online. I don't know if it was like message boards. It must have been because it was pre-social media, but some of the fans were kind of bitching about it. Because I think they did feel like, oh, she's too well known. But the other aspect of it is I remember people were kind of, and again, in like a judgmental, snotty way. Well, this is how I was reading it. And I have no idea who this is. They'll probably have changed their opinion since then as we, grow up. But they were sort of like saying, oh, well, I heard that Joss told Michelle to slow it down and do it more like acoustic like, so that would actually fit, Which is entirely possible, but that was definitely done with like a, oh, I can't believe sort of like tone to the comments. But you can actually find, I'm not saying it's that same version, but that toned down, more acoustic version on her. I don't know if it was a re-release of the album, but you can certainly find it because it's on the streaming version of the album that I listened to. And I do have to say, I like that version better. And it just may be because for me, it's tied to that episode. So I like the the slower, less full-on rock version.
And I don't remember, and quite frankly, maybe it's because that's maybe that's the version that I always hear in my head when I think about that song. But I
Yeah.
don't remember the song being that much
It's
faster
not huge.
or more like that much more robust
It's
than
not hugely
that.
different. It's not hugely different. You're right.
I mean, I'm sure it has, it's a little bit because she, I think she just starts off. I think probably the first part of it is stripped down a little bit. And
Right.
then when she gets it, because they bring in the drums and all of that stuff. And then at the end of it, she gets a little bit more. It's probably just, it's like an unplugged session or whatever, like of the song,
Exactly.
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, I think it just may feel maybe a little bit sadder,
Yeah.
in that version, which obviously works.
I
So
mean, yeah, it's a sad song. I mean,
it is a sad song. All right, we discussed in the musical.
I've got a theory.
Oh,
It could be Bonnie's. Where to start? I don't even know how I want to,
okay,
how do
I
we
have a
want to frame
question.
this? Okay.
Do you remember your state of mind and like how you watched it, like when you watched it? Do you remember that time period when it came out?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what were you doing?
Absolutely. I blacked out during the musical. It was an out of body experience for me. No, I remember I was living with some friends of mine. We were doing a tour together, and so we lived together, but we were all watching Buffy and we were very, very excited about it. And we were in the living room, like we had a whole set up, you know, we were super excited. We had like the snack
Yeah.
spread out and ready. And I just remember, you know, just being so excited and being like overly more excited than a grown person should probably be about a television show. And when she's singing that first song, and she's singing her I Want song, and she's
Right.
like, you know, and she goes, and I just want to be steak alive.
Yeah, through the
I
dust.
lost my ever loving mind. I went crazy, and I was like, she's a Disney princess. This is a movie. I
Then
just
25 years later, she would become one.
Right, just a complete nut job about the entire thing. I loved every single moment of it. I'm sure we did, recorded it, and probably went back and watched it again, like immediately after. No, because we had to watch Angel, and then we watched Angel, and then went back and watched, and rewatched
Yeah.
it again. How about you? What was your, do you remember you?
Kind of similar experience. I was stage managing at the time, and there was someone on the crew who I befriended, and I found out, oh, she's a Buffy fan. So I actually, and this was like me living on my own for the first time post college. I invited over, and I really think this was like my first guest. I remember I cooked like a whole meal, and none of the food like made sense. It was just all the things I could cook well. Like I made mac and cheese, and then I made these really delicious black bean cakes with like a mango salsa.
Ooh, that does
Doesn't
sound
go
good.
together, but like everything was great. And then, you know, I probably had some additional stuff and drinks. And yeah, it was. And so she and her girlfriend came over, and it was just the three of us. And I was like super excited to have a friend who watched Buffy, first of all. So that was like number one. And yeah, it was sort of the same. Like we were just so hyped up. And you know, she was also a theater person, so that was like, you know, we came from a love of like theater, musical theater, so that helped. And just it was just like it was better than I expected. And I remember when it ended thinking, this kind of reminds me, I get a very Sondheim vibe from it. And then I remember reading an article or an interview with Joss Whedon not long after it came out, and that was one of his inspirations. And I just felt like so smart for getting that vibe. I felt like I was like, yes, I'm on your wavelength. I get
So it's so funny that like I also remember thinking once it was over, like once we're just kept thinking, this needs to be like a staged musical. Like this needs to be. Years later, some friends of mine did do their own version of it, like in a little canteen production where they did Once More with Feeling, which was super cute.
That's awesome.
It works really well as a stage thing, and they do it at they used to. I think they still might do it at Dragon Con. I know they used to do sort of the Rocky Horror version of it.
I was lucky enough to go to one of those before the Fox shut it down. It was in this awesome historic movie theater, like old school movie theater in Chicago. And I remember so much because I was with I volunteered with an organization, and that day was their big annual fundraiser, which was a day of service. Like you went out to schools and did kind of like the way Habitat Humanity, but you're not like rebuilding a school. You're just going in and like repainting or cleaning up things, or just kind of helping out schools that were in like lower income neighborhoods, so they didn't always have the resources they needed. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But like I was at that all day, and then I ha was going to the showing of Once More with Feeling that night. And I was so sick. But I was like, I am not missing out. I did my volunteer thing. I rallied. I like came home right away and showered at 8. Did not let myself like relax at all because I was like, I am not falling asleep. This is like my one opportunity. You are pushing through. And I pushed through, and it was so much fun. It makes me so sad that they can't do those anymore
Yeah.
because it was. Like if you've never been to one and you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, it must be the most amazing thing to be with so many Buffy fans watching the iconic episode and singing along and people dress up. It is that and more. It was everything I had ever hoped it would be. It was phenomenal, phenomenal.
I love it. I think
I
it's so
know.
much fun.
It was so good. So anyway, as to the quality of the episode.
Right. I
Yeah, it
mean,
kind of wasn't that good. I don't know what we have to
I
talk
don't
about.
know. There's nothing to talk about. It's just, I mean,
Well, I
it's
think we've mentioned the episode before, I think in other episodes of our podcast,
we
but
have,
to
yeah.
reiterate what we've said before is, this was not a commonly done thing. And when it had been done previously, well, first off, there was, as we mentioned, that cop rock show, which was
Oh God.
terrible and like died almost immediately. I can't remember. I had there been a musical episode? I think there had been before, but it was maybe one or two.
Yeah, I don't think there there wasn't a whole lot of I don't think there was a lot out there.
No, I mean, this basically set the precedent. The fact that like Scrubs and as you said, was it Star Trek Discovery? And even though they used not original songs, but the Grey's Anatomy one, like none of that probably would have happened without the Once More with Feeling.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just doing a quick like. So yeah, when we're looking at I'm looking like when you look at stuff when you saw musicals on TV, like you were looking at more, you're looking more at like musical productions being done as something that happens on TV, but you're not really getting, you're not really getting. Like these episodes, you're not getting like an episode of a show. I mean, maybe, and again, like, you get singing in shows. Like, if you go back to like the Brady Bunch or the Partridge Family or something like that, you've got, those sort of singing kind of things. But, post in a post Buffy world, Everyone does a musical episode now. Like, it's the thing to do. Like, everyone does it. So it really just sort of set the scale. And I just tried to do a quick Google search to see if I could find anything, sort of pre-Buffy, and nothing that I see is really coming up.
In doing the research for this, I know I came across, like, I believe it was one or two, and I apologize, I did not make note of it for some reason. But yeah, I mean, it was basically Buffy and then whatever came after Buffy. It definitely set the precedent. And I think partly why is, which is maybe why those previous ones didn't necessarily work. And I say this not having seen them, but one of the things that Buffy did really well is it tied it to the story. It advanced the story. It wasn't like a one-off, like, oh, we're going to do this wacky thing for ratings, but it doesn't really matter to the rest of the series. It's like, as we talked about, somebody had posted on one of the Facebook groups that they skipped the episode because they don't like musicals, and everyone was yelling at them, you have to go back and watch it. It is so critical to what happens in that in season six. Like,
Oh,
even
yes.
if you don't like a musicals, you cannot miss this episode. It is not a one-off. It is so integral to everything that happens in season six.
Well, and it's one of those things that if you actually skip that episode, or you could watch that episode and figure out everything that's happening in the show solely based on just watching that one episode. I think, too, because of the success of that and because you see how that works so well, we get other series, like we get like musical series like My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is a great series. That's a musical series. There was Galahad.
Oh, I forgot about that. I did watch that one.
And so the idea that a television show could be a musical does work.
I love that the cast was up for it, and that everyone participated as themselves, even if they weren't a strong singer.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know, like, Allison Hannigan has been quoted as saying, like, she singing is not her thing, so she kind of pulled back, and then afterwards was like, damn it, I wish I had actually, like, just gotten over my fear and part, you know, had a song or a duet or whatever it was, which I get. As me, like, I love to sing, but that is not my strong suit either. I mean, I get that, like, it's one of those things, I don't know, maybe just as a non-singer it resonates more, but it just feels like one of the most terrifying things to put yourself out there for when you can't because people are so judgy about
Yeah. I
it.
mean, it's true. I think that's and people are very judgmental about it. And so but then when you look at what Allison did on Dancing with the Stars and see how like amazing she did and like how many people she moved by, overcoming that fear. It's really great. And it's, 'cause they're I just like in some of my research on this, I just think it's interesting too, like the musical background of the artists, of the actors in the show. Oz has some has some musical background, but then you've got like I mean Giles, who was in Rocky
Oh, of
Horror,
course,
and
yeah.
and all the
And
times that he sang,
James.
and James, with his band. And that's the other thing too, is like all the times that Giles sang, we didn't even talk like
Oh,
In
yeah.
terms of that, like, and his,
Too bad they couldn't have him do it more often.
yeah, 'cause,
I mean, that would have been a great midlife crisis in season four for him to, like, have more gigs.
right, where Giles is just playing the
It's acoustic night on
It's
at
a
the Bronze.
right open mic night at the Bronze, and there's just Giles just playing away.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, Danny Strong goes on to produce and co-create Empire, which is this whole hip hop themed soap opera again, which works. Like it's a drama that has this musical, element into it. So it really kind of worked in that way. So I think that once more, I mean, we've talked about once more of a feelings so much before, I feel like. But I think these little extra bits are kind of key.
Okay, so here comes the question.
Okay.
Favorite song?
It's the duet between Giles
Tara.
and Tara. Yeah.
Damn it, that was mine.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
I think we've talked about this offline.
Maybe that's what it is.
I know that the overlay of the music, their voices, it's gorgeous and it's so emotional. Like I get everything that they're feeling in that moment.
Oh, that song lives rent free in my head. Like,
Oh, a hundred
literally. Like,
percent.
I'm constantly.
Yeah.
Like, so much shit. I remember after that, I went and bought his album Music for Elevators
Oh, uh-huh.
that he did because Amber Benson was on it. She did some background vocals
Okay.
on that. It was pretty good. It was an okay. It wasn't necessarily my
Cup of tea.
exactly what I wanted, but it was still good. I enjoyed it.
Okay, so as we wrap up, I've got my trivia.
Oh, okay.
The thing I was super excited to tell you about, and
Oh,
I
right.
really hope you don't know, because I want to like be able to tell you, be the one to tell you. All right, so one we've already discussed and you know, but one of the cool connections between one of the cool many connections between Buffy and the movie Bring It On is that the score was done by Chris Beck, who was doing Buffy at the time as well. So that was cool. Okay, here's my big one. So I was re-looking up who did the vocals for Jonathan when he sang that beautiful song at the Bronze during Superstar. I wanted to like confirm it was who I thought it was, and I was correct, but then this is where I discovered all this new information about that person that blew my mind. So do you know who it was that did the vocals? Because it was not
It wasn't Danny Strong.
Danny Strong singing. No, correct. They brought in a vocal double.
I do not know who it
Okay.
is.
It was Brad Kane. Do you know who Brad Kane is?
I don't know who Brad Kane is.
Brad Kane is probably most well known, and this is what I knew him from, as having done the vocals on Aladdin, the original Disney animated Aladdin. So like
Oh, okay.
it was, they had different they had actors to do the speaking role, and then they had brought in two singers to do the singing role, and Brad Kane did Aladdin. He was Aladdin's song
Oh.
double or whatever you call it. Here's where my mind was blown. Did you know that Brad Kane played Tucker Wells?
Oh.
I had no idea that he also played Tucker Wells.
So Tucker and the one from
Yeah, from the
the
prom, he's
prom,
Andrew's brother, and he's the
Andrew's
one that
brother,
released the Hellhound.
is the vocal double
Correct.
for Jonathan.
Yes. And wait, here comes the next part. Guess who he is married to? Sarah Thompson, aka Eve from Angel.
What?
Right? Who was in Cruel Intentions 2 with Amy Adams?
It's
It is
six
like
degrees of
full
Buffy.
circle, 1 degree of Buffy. The whole, like, him playing Tucker and him being married to Sarah Thompson blew my mind. When I was reading his, like, info and it said married to Sarah Thompson, I was like, that name is awfully familiar. And I was like, I think it's Eve. But let's face it, like a pretty common name.
Sure.
So I like, I further Googled and I was like, sure enough, it is that Sarah Thompson.
That's
I was
wild.
like, mind blown. So that is my like fact of the
Okay, so that's a
podcast.
good one. So the person who's singing the song it's off a new album in Superstar
Right.
is the guy who releases the Hellhounds in the prom, who is married to the sassy administrative assistant from the senior partners from Wolf from Her Heart
She was
and
the
sees
liaison.
the liaison to the senior partners
And
above
who
my
sang
heart.
all of Aladdin's songs in
And
the
who sang?
original Disney animated film. Yes. And I think who has a beautiful voice. Like that actually is one thing I was really bummed they didn't do on any of the soundtracks is release him singing that song. I wish there was a way you could get that song. If you know of a way to get that song, please send us an email and let us know because I would love to find out. Like if it's available somewhere that I did not know about.
That was worth the wait. That was definitely.
Yes, I'm so glad I like really wanted to tell you the other night, and I was like, no, I'm gonna save it for the episode, save it for the
That was good. That was good. I did
podcast.
not know that. I did not know that at all. That's very cool. I love that.
Yeah, so
Oh my goodness.
all right, well thanks everyone so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of A Girl, a Guy, and a Buffy podcast.
Yes, and if you like what you heard, please like and review us. And you know, leave us a little message and tell us what you think. And you know, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at A Buffy Podcast.
You can email us at abuffypodcast@gmail.com.
All right, so thanks so much, and we will see you next time for our it's coming up. We're coming up on the end of the season here. Okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
All right, we'll see y'all next time.
Bye.
Bye.